Hello, and welcome to Snyder's Return, a tabletop role-playing podcast. Today, my guest has taken on game design challenges with both hands, enjoys a good babble, and when not displaying her art wares on Instagram, can be found in amongst the petals. From Geekspective, arriving faster than any large oceanic dolphin has the right to do so, is the incredibly talented rocket orca, Amber Seeger. Amber, welcome to the show.
Hi, thank you so much for having me.
It's an absolute pleasure. You're incredibly busy, but before we touch on everything you're doing now and what you have planned for the future, would you mind sort of letting us know how you got into both tabletop role-playing games and podcasting, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. So, funny story. I loved sharing this so much. I had a friend who wanted me to play role-playing games. He wanted me to play Dungeons & Dragons, my friend Josh. And I looked him in the eye and was like, no, I'll never play D&D. But he wore me down, and I ended up playing in a D&D campaign, a D&D 3.5 actually campaign with him and some other friends of ours for 7 straight years. So I went from never, I'll never do this, to it's all I do now. And so getting into the actual podcasting stuff, it's actually really Josh. Josh is the friend who got me into D&D and then also brought me into the podcasting world with Geekspective. And so he and I think he's the one who started. Yes, he started his first show, which was that campaign we played in, that 3.5. It was called Evil Is As Evil Does, where we were playing all evil characters. And then we started to branch out from there. So there's Tales from Moxfairy, which is a game that Josh runs and I play in. We have 2 seasons out right now. It's the first season was Blades in the Dark. The second season we're using Godbound, and we're returning to our 3.5 evil characters, and we converted them to Godbound. And then stuff just kind of kept snowballing from there. I wanted to GM. I had never done it before. I had been playing for years and years, but I was always kind of anxious about becoming a game master. And so if you're anxious and you're nervous, what better way to get over it by recording yourself doing it all and having to listen to yourself over and over again, hour after hour? I wouldn't recommend it for the weak of heart, but I did it, and that was Shapeshift. That's my actual play podcast, which is also part of Geekspective.
All right. Well, you mentioned a few shows there and a lot of points I'd love to dig into. But before we move on, where can people find you and your content so I can put some links in the description and really sort of signpost people in your direction?
Oh, sure. So geekspective.com, GeekSpective.com is where all of the podcasts I do. That's the podcast network I co-own with Josh and our friend Dave. And basically, I live on Twitter. So if you go to Twitter at Rocket Orca, I mean, you can find everything from there. And then also my website, rocketorca.com, which is my professional website with my graphic design and layout stuff.
All right. I will make sure those links are in the description below. I have to come back to the evil characters. Evil Is As Evil Does. Is that the side of the game that you enjoy playing the most, or was that just what you fell into and are happy to go back to?
Well, I think it was. This is Josh's baby, right? So he wanted to play evil characters. I think at the time there's a lot of shows out there like Dexter, I think, was one where they were showing more of the evil characters of side of stuff. And I think Josh realized that there was no actual plays at the time that focused on evil characters, and actually playing D&D with evil aligned characters, it kind of has a sort of like, I'm not sure what you would say, like it's hard to do because people think that evil can be just like your murder constant, like how do you prevent infighting essentially. But we did it for 7 years straight, and we still play those same characters to this day. But I don't know if I would say it's my favorite It's definitely interesting. And since it was like my first campaign, I kind of have nostalgia for it. So I don't mind going back to that character. So I would just say it's because my friend Josh wants to play this game with us. I enjoy playing that game with him in the table.
Fair enough. And you mentioned there a couple of different systems, Blades in the Dark and Godbound. What is it about those systems that you've enjoyed? And are there other systems that you have enjoyed playing that you would love to either do an actual play or move through and play more often?
So Blades in the Dark, again, Tales from Oxfairy and Evil Isn't Evil Does is Josh's, those are his shows. Mm. And he was running D&D 3.5 for 7 years. And at year seven, he was like, oh boy, I want to try something different. The indie scene is exploding with a bunch of new games and new ideas. There's more than just Dungeons and Dragons now. And I think for him, what he was interested in about Blades in the Dark is that it runs kind of like a heist. And he was interested in trying that. And it was like the new hotness at the time, right? I liked it because it was... I'll just say this. Going from Dungeons and Dragons mindset to Powered by the Apocalypse, Blades in the Dark, there was definitely a learning curve. It was difficult for our group to get used to it. Like, all of us have been playing D&D for so long, to switch from a Dungeons and Dragons game to that. We had a hard time with like fiction first narrative and then not trying to min-max our characters or like trying to make the best of our characters in a mechanics way. And so there was a few sessions where it was very tense, I would say. I think at one point in time, I think we cut it from the podcast, but I was getting really sassy at Josh about stuff in the game just because of I wasn't used to it. But I really like it now. And especially one of my favorite things about Blades in the Dark is the whole stress and flashback mechanic. That to me is like so well done for telling narrative, you know, telling a story, to be able to mechanically say, I pay 2 stress or whatever stress the facilitator guide says is worth the amount you want to do to go back into the past and have a flashback scene, kind of like in a movie. I mean, I try to apply that to every game I run now. So that's Blades in the Dark. For Godbound, we chose it because we were going back to our 3.5 characters. And in Dungeons and Dragons, once you become like a level 10 wizard, you're basically a demigod at that point, it feels like. But one of the things about podcasting an actual play and recording it is sometimes those combat scenes can be, one, horrible to edit, and two, sometimes not the most engaging for a listener. And so we were looking for a system where we could still feel like demigods without having the bogged down mechanics of that is Dungeons and Dragons combat system. And I really like in Godbound that you can pick these words that represent what your demigod character is. And that to me is really fun and interesting. We've been playing it for about a year now. And I really like that aspect of like getting to pick and choose these words and things that go with your god to craft this really, really fun god. I made one for a one shot that was like madness, drugs. I can't remember the other one, but it was a really silly character. I played it up pretty silly, not as dark as those words could be. But yeah, so that's what I like about Godbound.
All right. And any in the future that you'd be looking to play that have caught your eye?
Oh man, there are so many games out there now. So a lot of the ones that haven't even come out yet, right? Like I'm really looking forward to J Dragon's Wander Home. That kind of game is more my style. What I tend to like to create myself. I don't mind playing in a lot of different types of moods and genres and stuff, but for me, pastoral, happy, slow, contemplative kinds of games are more my jam. And so I'm looking really forward to that. Another game that's coming out soon is Andrew Gillis's Girl by Moonlight, which is a Blades in the Dark hack. game that is Magical Girls, but with like a darker side to it. And that's a genre I really like. Something I would like to probably run for a podcast one day. And then also Quest. Quest is another RPG that I've been really looking forward to play and or run.
Yeah, lots of interesting ones. Quest, I've started to hear a lot more about and seems to be capturing the imagination. So definitely one to look out for. And you mentioned there the more pastoral. So I'm going to use a tenuous link to get onto Petal Grove and Torg and your appearances in those games. So what's it been like sort of playing with the other members of the community in games such as those?
So The Warren of Petal Grove, which you just mentioned, is a actual play that I started running because there is a game out there that's powered by the Apocalypse called The Warren by Marshall Miller. And it's probably one of my favorite games to run for one-shots. I've run it several times at conventions or big friend groups when we had big friend groups, parties and stuff. And it is a game about rabbits. So all the PCs are rabbits, and I just really enjoy nature games and then playing from different perspectives. And I've always liked like shows that are like, I'm getting into Redwall right now. Those kinds of books, I really enjoy. And so when I started doing The Warren of Petal Grove, I really wanted to, one, play with a bunch of new people that I haven't really got to play with or play with them again, and then also make this story within a story. So as you get to talk with me and we get deeper into things, you're going to notice I like layers of stuff. So I have in my podcast Shapeshift, which has basically 70% of every game I've ever run is captured in that podcast, right? It's me learning how to GM. And so in it, on top of like a bunch of one-shots, like I ran Monster Hearts, Casket Land, there's a bunch of other stuff in there. But I also captured my first campaign, which is using the system Ryutama, which I like to... And I think everybody in the community has heard about Ryutama. They get told it's basically Oregon Trail plus a Studio Ghibli film like Princess Mononoke or Spirited Away or something like that. And so in my first campaign, I've made a world with my players. It's called Loam. And so when I made The Warren of Petal Grove, I took this rabbit world and I just like put it into my world, Loam. So it's like this tiny story inside of a bigger story kind of deal. And then I also wanted to do it as an anthology. So I was like, okay, it'd be really fun to run a one shot that is, you know, usually 4-ish hours long, spread it out over 4 sessions with 4 different players. Cause these nesting layers, what have I done to myself? I just really liked that concept and it was really fun. So I reached out to people I had played with before, because if you're running a one shot and you're streaming it live or doing as a podcast, you don't really have that time with the group to really build that comfort level with each other, like that play style back and forth. So when I picked Warren of Petal Grove, that I was picking the cast members, I wanted them to be people who had already worked with each other before or that I had worked with, so that at least somebody knew somebody at the table. And I think that worked really well. And it was really fun to see one group do a story inside this one Warren, have a certain tone to it. The next group had a completely different tone. And the ongoing show, which I think by the time this comes out will probably be over, another completely different tone, but all set in the same world. And they might have like little tenuous notes of what they know what happened before, but they're rabbits and gossip happens and stuff gets morphed around. But they all interact with the same NPCs they've all been interacting. So if you're a viewer of the show or a listener of the show, you will hear the same NPCs, and it's kind of like Easter eggs. I like that stuff for myself when I listen to podcasts, so I wanted to do that too. So I've really enjoyed working with the people, or it's just funny to say working, playing with the people that that I've invited on the show and getting to play with them again.
Yeah, and someone you play with and work with is Rudy Basso, which is a tied to a the role at Tabletop Babel you stepped into from James Intricasso. Would you mind telling us a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Yes. So Rudy Basso is a great person. I really love working with Rudy. Rudy has been editing Shapeshift, my show, for probably a year and a half. No, longer than a year. Almost 2 years now. How does time work? So Rudy's been editing my podcast for about 2 years now. And that's kind of how I met him and James. So James and I have played in some games together, met each other at Gen Cons and stuff. And I've been on Tabletop Babel when James was hosting it probably 3 or 4 times. I can't remember how many times. And so one day I, just minding myself, scrolling through Twitter, I get a DM from James basically saying, hey, letting you know Rudy and I are dissolving DSPN at the end of the year. And I would like to know if you'd be interested in taking the host as for Tabletop Babel. And I was super surprised because that's just not something I would have considered myself for. But I think as humans, we're pretty bad at seeing like what our strengths are and how we can fit into things just because we don't look at we don't have that perspective, the outside perspective, of course. So he asked me that and I kind of was like, oh no, yes, but also would I be good at this? I don't know. But if James is asking me, he must see something in me that would be good for this. Okay, just say yes. This would be good. Just do it. You would have fun doing it. So I had to sort of talk myself into it over the span of like probably 2 hours because it wasn't really that hard of a decision. I just had never done an interview show before. I mean, I spend a lot of time playing role-playing games with people and I've been GMing for several years, but I had never thought, oh, I would be good at doing interviews per se. Especially because like I'm pretty open to the fact that I'm a very socially anxious person. It's been something I've been overcoming or like working with more like for the last couple of, well, for my entire life really, but only in the last like 5 or so years have I been working on trying to be a little bit more social and working with those feelings of anxiety. And so I was really nervous when James asked me to take on Tabletop Babel. I wanted to do it.
Yeah. And you've been absolutely knocking it out of the park. I imagine that James is exceptionally proud of the choice he made. I can imagine nothing less. Having spoken to James previously.
I hope so.
I'm sure of it, 100%. And your, again, tenuous link maybe of working with James hasn't ended there, though indirectly as you have worked on the Zweihänder-based Flames of Freedom, which has his input upon it. Would you mind sort of letting us know how you got into that and your involvement with that, please?
Oh, yeah, sure. So again, funny thing, you know, working with my social anxiety stuff, I had Gen Con, which is this huge convention up in Indianapolis, Indiana, here in the United States. I pushed myself to do some social networking. And that's how I met Daniel Fox, is at this random like, oh, yeah, I'll go to this party. And then I found a nerd I could like, we connected and we started talking about stuff. And I didn't know that it could potentially lead to work. Which it's like, that's what networking is for, right? So for the listeners, I, in my professional life, well, I, you know, day job, hobby job. So my day job, I do graphic design and layout design. I have been doing it for 10 years professionally. Do page layout for instruction manuals, write instruction manuals, do technical illustrations. But I also have a graphic design background in my education and in my freelance work. And I had mentioned that to Daniel, and he remembered. And so there, I think at that point in time, I think that Gen Con, I did a panel about designing better character sheets and like how to structure information and like making visual choices and stuff like that. And I had made it as a blog post, and Daniel had read that. And so my first connection to Daniel working with him and Zweihänder stuff was he asked me to redesign the character sheet for Zweihänder, which I streamed live as Designhänder was the show. And then from there, you know, you do one work with one person, and then he was like, well, hey, I have this other game coming out that I'm helping. It's publishing through Andrews McMeel. Would you be interested in doing some work for it? I was like, oh, well, of course, I'm trying to do more of this in the TTRPG space, because instruction manuals are fine, but they're pretty mind-numbing at times. So let's do something fun. And so he asked me to do work on Flames of Freedom. So what I did for that game was I built the page layout design for the book and created the style guide for it, as well as I did the character sheet stuff. And I also did some like iconography for like page chapters of the book. And it's been great. I mean, I really appreciate that Daniel gave me that opportunity, and working with Daniel has been wonderful. Very clear, good feedback, super supportive. So it's been a very good experience overall.
Mm. And just to boost you a little bit more, I should say, I watched some of the Designhänder stuff you did, and it was informative and entertaining, which I think was what you were going for. But I enjoyed it anyway.
Yes. I really did. I was surprised. Like, so much I'm used to just like working kind of by myself, kind of in my own little corner of the world. And so I didn't know if I would enjoy streaming design stuff of live, but it was super fun to do. And yeah, I also like kind of peeling back the design curtain of like how stuff gets made and how finicky and silly and frustrating it can be at times. And I think that was, yeah, was the purpose: be entertaining but also informative.
Definitely. Using the word design there and silliness, and you have your own line of enamel pins and other designs, should we say, available. Please give me a sales pitch.
Okay, so talking about your own work is hard, right?
But it's good, so I'd love to hear about it.
Sure. I need to seize this opportunity. Come on, Amber, talk about yourself and your work. So for me, I started drawing little goblins. I love goblins. Goblins are like my favorite creature. I love playing them. I think they're funny. I love them in Magic the Gathering. They're my favorite tribe in Magic the Gathering because I play a lot of Magic. Well, I could play more, honestly. I haven't really, but anyway, I used to play a lot of Magic. But I love goblins. And so I started drawing like little goblins to entertain myself. Is it more of like a, like, I love to draw, but I don't have a lot of time to do that. So I made it a point on my lunch breaks to draw a little goblin eating some food, or maybe my lunch or some other food that I wish I was eating. And that became just an art project for myself, just to keep me from going stale in drawing. And then I started putting it out there. Then somebody wanted themselves drawn like a goblin. And then all of a sudden I opened up commissions to draw people as goblins. And then my style kind of progressed over time to the point where I was like, oh, these would be really cute as enamel pins. And I had already previously started to design enamel pins. And I was like, okay, let's do this. I'm going to open up a pin Patreon, which is Rocket Orca is my Patreon. So patreon.com/RocketOrca. And I started Pin Club, where I have two different pin tiers, where it's one is more cutesy. Those are where my goblins go. And then I have a more darker kind of tone pins, which are more geometric and more designerly. I guess I don't know how kind of words you would use for it, but they're for more like anime inspired stuff. And I started making them, and then I guess people like them and they're cute and they make me happy, and I'm glad other people like them too. And I started an Etsy as well. And so they're up on Etsy. I'm going to be doing this big shop update in March to put these enamel pins up there. And I, I have planned the pins out for another year, and I have another pin Kickstarter I would like to do for the goblins. I'm going to do a dice goblins Kickstarter, I think. Mm. Like goblins holding different dice. Mm. Dice.
No, that sounds good. And definitely,
yeah,
something
it's been really fun.
Yeah. So when that Kickstarter comes, I'm sure we'll retweet and support where we can. Absolutely. So you mentioned there some of the influences, the Magic the Gathering and the anime. So away from work, away from streaming, podcasting and things like that, what is it you do for downtime? Is it more focused on the drawing? Do you watch shows, films? Where do your influences come from?
Okay, so yeah, I watch a lot of YouTube, and I watch a ton of media analysis reviews. So, like, I really love Lindsay Ellis's analysis of videos. Gosh, I watch a lot of Cosmonaut Marcus and Red Letter Media, even though they can be sometimes a little bit problematic. They still do some amazing film analysis. I'm really into movies. Anime, I don't watch as much. It's like I have rotating interests, right? Like right now I'm hyper fixated on media analysis of Lord of the Rings. So I've been listening to this podcast called Newcomers, which has two comedians who aren't into like our genre at all, like fantasy genre at all, and have no like background in it or whatever, and they're watching Lord of the Rings, and it's so funny to hear people who don't have that knowledge listening it to the first time and then trying to figure out the difference between Sauron and Saruman. It's hilarious. And it's cracking me up right now. And usually when things make me laugh or I have a good time with it, that is usually where my inspiration ends up coming from. And then from there, that becomes something creative. Either it's going to be, maybe I make a funny pin design that makes me laugh. It's poking fun at Lord of the Rings and how I love it, but it is silly. And if you're from the outside, an outsider's perspective of hearing it, it's got to sound ridiculous. So that might inspire something. Or like right now, I just finished all of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies. So previously, I had not watched, I've watched like maybe three or four of them total. And then I said, you know what? I have a Christmas break is coming up. I'm going to have time. Let's just go through these movies. And I did. And I'm like, why did I wait this long? And so now I'm like super into Marvel Cinematic Universe. And I'm like, okay, I want to draw. Like I really want to draw Vision right now, but I have all these other things to do. But it'll sit in the back of my mind. And that's kind of where that inspiration comes from. And like I mentioned Redwall earlier, I started reading the Redwall series, and it's because I'm running games like The Warren of Pettelgrove or my Ryutama campaign, where there's a lot of little nature adventures with animals or animal people and that kind of stuff. And I love that pastoral kind of setting. And so that is going to inform a lot of the stuff that I put into the world.
No, it all sounds really good and really exciting and really entertaining. Some of the things you share with us, so I appreciate that peek behind the curtain, I guess. So I'll challenge you slightly, since you have just watched the entire Marvel Cinematic catalog in weeks, shall we say? What's your top three films out of the entire back catalog?
Okay. That's actually pretty easy for me. So I loved Infinity War. The risk they took with that ending was amazing. I love it. It was so good. It's so bleak. And I think I really, really enjoy when not everything is all fun and games. Like there are real consequences, and failure is a thing that can happen with people, of course, in superhero stuff and also in our campaigns, right? Or D&D and actual play. I like stuff like that. So Infinity War is one of those ones where I kind of wish I had experienced it in a movie theater with a bunch of people at the time it happened, because I think it would have been like doubly chilling. But it was still on its own, like, holy moly. And I didn't feel bored Like, I felt like the whole movie, even though it was really long, was like super well paced and just like, oh, you had so many characters, but they did a good job with like scene framing, which is all like, every time I watch movies now, it's all related to like tabletop stuff. I'm like, I could do this in the tabletop game. This is great. I could try and do this as well. Mm-hmm. So I loved Infinity War. I think that would be my number one. After that, I know people don't like it, but it's along the same vein of being bleak and like dealing with consequences. And I can forgive some of like the movie, like editing errors and pacing and stuff. It was Civil War. For me, mm-hmm. that was just a really good character driven movie where you got to see Tony Stark's PTSD like really start to form like what his character choice is and his character. You could see where the character arc was going with Tony, right? And then also the conflict between Captain America. And you could just see, like, if you were talking about like D&D alignment, like I think, you know, they're very good representations of just how fixated and how aligned they are in their character stuff, Tony and Captain America. And then you got to see Spider-Man, which is pretty cool. And then my third favorite movie of that was, it's Thor Ragnarok, which is a total shift.
Yeah.
Complete good. Shift from the other two, but it's what I love. I love fun. It was colorful. It was fun. It was a new place. It was exploration. It was interesting backstories. It was fun to see Hulk as the Hulk. And so for me, those were my three favorite. I'm just going to say footnote that Spider-Mans exist in a different world for me. And so Spider-Mans have a different love and they exist differently. But I love those two movies as well.
Yeah, absolutely. And even in Thor Ragnarok, it gets a bit bleak and dark.
Yes, yeah, there were moments of it, but definitely, oh God, and Jeff Goldblum was so, like, I could just, Jeff Goldblum's character, the Grandmaster, whatever he was, is an NPC I would love to, like, just stick in a game. It would be great.
So, yes, they are a rich resource for taking not only into D&D, but so many other systems. And you've drawn out a couple of points I'd love to sort of move forward with, if that makes any kind of sense. The point of failure can be fun. Do you think that gets underutilized in certain game systems and certain tables, should we say?
Sure, I think, and it could just be older mindset. I don't know. Like, I feel like when I first started playing D&D, it didn't feel good to fail. There wasn't really a fail forward. It was either you cast your spell or you don't, and then it blows up in your face. In a lot of these games that were coming out, Apocalypse World and anything that's powered by the apocalypse, that you fail forward is such a more fun thing than you just don't do it, right? And so I really liked that change. So from going from D&D, which was my only experience of role-playing games prior, except I mean, I have played other old games because part of Geekspective, we have a one of our friends, and actually one of the co-hosts of Tabletop Babble, John, he's been playing RPGs before I was born. And so he has lots of old games that we get to try out every once in a while, like as a non-content play, try it out kind of situation. Those games really didn't do a lot of fiction stuff. And I can, like, some of the games I've experienced are like Boot Hill, for instance, which has like no role playing in it whatsoever. It's literally just you're a cowboy or a townsperson or whatever, and it's all just about rolling to see if you shoot things and move around on a map. We played the Palladium's Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, which was fun. Character generation was hilarious, but again, not a lot of incentivizing to role play. And I think because of that, that no incentive to role play, and then you just roll a die and you either do it or don't, it's kind of like not very fun. But to have that bargaining piece in like Powered by the Apocalypse games where, yeah, you didn't succeed or you got a middle result. What's a fun thing that can have, like, what can happen? And I think some games like Quest, which I've recently read, there's things where you can get drawbacks or flaws or stuff if you fail, or like these really cool things if you like super succeed. And I think sometimes the failing stuff is way more interesting for like character development than it is just to be like, okay, I just win all the time and I'm a superhero.
Yeah, definitely. I've relatively recently sort of learned to play City of Mist, which is Powered by the Apocalypse based, I think it's a fair description. And that mind shift from do and don't, these sort of analog D&D to, okay, you rolled a miss, this is going to happen, but your character still is able to do X at the cost of Y, has been such an eye-opener that I've missed from games and have tried to work back into D&D with my group. So, I'm totally with you on that sort of stuff.
Yeah, because like, I think it's more engaging when you give your player hard choices than just saying X happens. You know, like X happens, great. Mm. I just sit there. And it kind of almost sometimes takes away character agency too, a little bit player agency over their character when just X happens or no happens. Whereas when you give people choices, they can make those bargains. I think bargaining and making choices as a player is just super engaging and keeps people more invested in the game.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. Speaking of investing and investment in a game, it sounds like a money question and it's not going to be. We've mentioned a couple of times evil characters and alignment charts. So where do you sort of stand on the alignment spectrum, both as a person and its use as a mechanic?
I think it's so difficult. Like, I really, as a person... Oh, man, I'm probably chaotic neutral. I don't know. I say that because if you listen to any of the podcasts that I'm on, and one of them being Red Mage, Blue Mage, which is my Magic the Gathering podcast, I co-host with the co-host of Tabletop Babble, Kenny Wolfmere. We have a dynamic that I am so contrarian and I'm so like chaotic, but also at the same time, I'm just like neutral on a lot of stuff. And I think it's because I don't want to say I can see every perspective or every viewpoint, right? Like that's impossible, but I like to think I'm pretty like, you know, like I don't get too passionate or like,
quite broad and open-minded.
Yeah, I feel like that's kind of more it. I don't know if that really fits with chaotic neutral, but whatever. I don't really know. Like, I even when we played evil aligned characters, it was difficult because sometimes the things we did as evil characters ended up being good for somebody else. You know, we did something bad, but it actually helped somebody else out. And we're like, wait, did we just do something good for somebody by accident because we thought we were doing evil? Which is a recurring theme in all of our evil games. Like we do something that we think is bad because we're bad characters and it's going to progress our selfish goals, and then it's like, oh wait, but we just helped out the infrastructure of this city and we just helped what have we done? Or whatever. Like
you are the worst kind of evil people.
And so I don't know, like for me, mechanics, it's personally, I don't buy into it because I think people can be too versatile and it really is context dependent. So I think it's fun to try to play to an alignment, but I don't think you should be punished if your character slides out, because there was definitely an instance in our campaign when we first started playing the evil one in D&D 3.5, we had a player who was lawful evil. And then it was, they did something that was not a part of their alignment. And our GM, Josh, kind of like, quote unquote, struck them down, but from their deity that they were worshiping. And it was very punishing. But at the same time, it was like so hard But I think, I don't know. I'm open to the idea of alignment. I don't have any strong feelings about it.
That's a fair response. Definitely chaotic neutral. We've spoken about sort of Powered by the Apocalypse and other systems and the Titan of the hobby, which is D&D. So focusing on that for a moment, where do you want to see D&D go next? Be it setting or more, say, cultural community development?
I have been so far removed from D&D for so long now that it's hard for me to really speak on what I want to see from D&D.
Sure.
So going back to Tabletop Babble and D&D and stuff, I actually had Brennan Lee Mulligan came on to talk about, you know, his stuff going on and what he's doing in the D&D world. And for me, it was so funny because I asked him, I was like, I've never run D&D. Like, I have played lots of Dungeons and Dragons, but I have not really run it. And he was like, well, you've been jamming for 4 years, like, you've never run D&D. I'm like, it's just not spoken to me as a game for a really long time. And I think that's kind of where I don't know how to speak on it, because by the time I started interacting with the TTRPG space and like being online and all of that, I hadn't played Dungeons and Dragons for like 3 years, 4 years. And even prior to that, we weren't, my group, we played D&D. It was all homebrew. It was all our own setting. We made up our own world. We sometimes referenced D&D gods and some D&D lore. And of course, lots of the monsters and character classes and all that. But we really just made up our own world. So I have a hard time trying to like talk about like Dungeons and Dragons. I'm just not like immersed in it right now. Although I will say, for setting wise, because I am an MTG nerd, I was really excited to see a Theros come out and they were doing MTG stuff. I was like, ooh, maybe I should play D&D again because this is a Magic the Gathering setting. So if I was to say what I would like to see or what could potentially get me to play Dungeons and Dragons is if there was more like Magic the Gathering cross. Like, I really liked the Eldraine set that came out. If there was a Dungeons and Dragons Eldraine world, I would be like, I'm in it. I want to play that game.
Yeah. You know, that's fair enough. And so with respect to TTRPGs as a whole and as a community, what would you like to see in the future?
Oh my goodness. I think more,
that's incredibly broad, and I apologize.
No. I think it's a good question, because like for me, it's kind of what I've been doing with Tabletop Babble, right? Like right now, what I would like to see more is diversity. Like the guests that I've been having on Tabletop Babble, a lot of them are indie creators. Not saying that James didn't also have indie creators on and stuff, but for me specifically, it's been kind of personal in the last year or so, seeing more and more creators from RPGC, SEA, so people like, for instance, the Philippines, it's been like, oh, they're Filipino lore. That's really cool to see in games and stuff now. And I would love more of that, more diversity, more worlds, more creators making things that we get to experience and enjoy and see their culture, essentially. I'm really excited for that. I have an interview coming out, or it's out right now, on Tabletop Babble. I interviewed Jammy, who has written things like Balak Bayan and, Apocalypse Keys. And they're a Filipino designer. And it's just like, oh, wow, I had no idea you were here. Let's put you on Tabletop Babble. More people need to hear your games and stuff. So that's kind of what I would like to see more of.
Hmm. Nice. It's good that you have the perfect platform to open out new players, new podcasters, streamers, and all that. All those good things, new communities, Discord servers, and all that sort of stuff can and do stem from your show, which is such a boon to the community.
Yeah, so I'm super excited. It's like James giving the show over to me, passing on the reins, I did have a lot of ideas that I wanted to be able to do with it, because I feel like there are so many voices and so many things being made that, you know, either you're not very online or you're not active in the community, but you listen to a podcast. Maybe this is a way that I can help expose people to new things and new experiences. And so one of the things I'm actually going to be doing for Tabletop Babble, which as of this recording, it's not out yet, but it will be hopefully whenever this comes out. We're doing a show within a show. Remember how I said I like layers? So yet again, I'm doing a show within a show. We are going to be doing a spotlight of a game. So this came about because I tend to buy RPGs that I'm really interested in, really excited about, and then they sit on my shelf or sit in my PDF folder, and I don't read them unless I'm going to play the game, like run the game, right? And I thought, okay, what?
Yeah, guilty as charged.
Yep. Yes. I think a lot of people are like that. So I thought, okay, what can I do for the community and also at the same time help other games get noticed that may get passed by or just not seen? And so what I started was a show, Tabletop Spotlight, a subsidiary of Tabletop Babble, to put in that same feed where we take a book, something right now that like I'm excited about, right? And we are going to go through it and review it. It's very structured. And we are going to read the whole book, and then we're going to talk about it and then make it, stream it. So it'll be streamed on twitch.tv/Geekspective. So Geekspective's Twitch channel. It'll be up on YouTube. And it'll come out as a podcast. And it's a thing where I actually made slides because I love making work for myself. Something I'm very good at. I made a slideshow, like basically a quick guide to go through the show. And let me look at this. I have it here in notes. There's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. There are 6 different sections for the show where we do the game introduction, our first impressions, a game overview, so to go over the mechanics and stuff. We'll actually do the character creation as well. Then there's a game master section and review. And then because my background is in user experience and layout design, I'm going to talk about the layout and the UX of the book as well. And I'm really excited. I hope people love it because I love doing it.
I'm sure they will. So if we really peeled all that back using the layers analogy, so you've got Tabletop Babble, then you've got this spotlight, which is going to focus on, which then has the sub layer or third layer of playing the game.
Yeah, oh my gosh. Yeah. And then I have to make another podcast to play that game inside of Tabletop Babble. No, I can't do that. I have to rein myself in.
Where do you find all this time?
I don't have time.
Well, I'm just going to encourage you now.
Okay, so the where do I find time question is actually a really good good thing I would like to discuss. Because I think if people were to truly witness the amount of things that I do, it would be, it's kind of a lot. I mean, I've heard people say you do a lot. And okay, so the secret is I have no life outside of this. I mean, okay, if I'm being really real, I'm super privileged in that, one, I don't have any kids. Okay. I have a partner who is super into all of the same things I'm into, and in fact is involved in a lot of the stuff that I do. So they're actually in Shapeshift a lot, and they play in my campaign. And they're also just super understanding, super supportive, and very encouraging of this hobby work that I do. My brother lives with me, and the way that he pays rent is that he does basically all of the chores. So I don't have to do chores.
That's good stuff.
It's a great setup. And then I just have a dog who, she's an old baby, so she's very low maintenance. And I really don't, and like all my friends, like we, Geekspective they're my friends. They're the people I spend the most time with. They're the people I enjoy spending my time with. And so we're just tabletop content creators together. And it's really fun. And so that's why I have time, because it's all I do. Also, it helps now to be in a pandemic. So helps to be in a pandemic.
Yeah, a strange bonus to the way things currently are, I guess. But yeah, there's nothing wrong with that. You work hard and you put out fantastic content. I have to say, with respect to time, content, and running games, if I may ask you for some advice for, say, a new podcaster or a new GM, DM, game runner, what advice would you hand out?
So I think I have two things that can kind of be rolled into maybe one overarching idea, is that you have to make sure that you're having fun for yourself and to pace yourself. Don't get into podcasting and running games or force yourself to do this stuff if you yourself, the person making it, the person show running it, aren't enjoying it. You just don't push yourself to do it, because then it's why are you doing it, right? For I don't know, likes, retweets, I mean, potential business stuff. But the longevity of it really comes from, do you enjoy it? And then if you're enjoying it and you're having a really good time with you, yourself, if you're just the one putting it out there, or if you're with a group of friends and you're doing it, I think other people start to notice that. And people like people having fun. I mean, it's why people listen to actual play podcasts or live streams or whatever, because it's just fun to do that. So I think that there's this really big external pressure on content creators. So you always be creating, you always have to be putting something out, you always have to get something out there, right? And it doesn't help that social media algorithms really kind of punish you if you're not. It sucks. I can talk about that a lot too, but whatever, we're not going to even go there. But the core of it is, I really hope, if you're first starting to get into it, one, please have fun. That's just, please be having fun doing it. And there's nothing wrong with you doing it. Same with if you play a game, right? If you play a game for a few sessions, like, and you're not enjoying yourself, or you're running a game that you're not enjoying running it, don't run it. I've learned that over the course of doing my Shapeshift show, like trying out all these indie games. If there's some games that I probably won't go back to because I didn't enjoy running them, that's fine. So I think it's okay to not do something if you are not enjoying it, and don't give in to sunk cost fallacy. And then also, of course, pace yourself.
Potentially, I won't say more important, but a very big statement to make about pacing and health, physical, mental, and emotional as well. It can be, I'm sure that you've had many an hour, as you say, listening to yourself hours on end, editing, going back and checking, and then it's levels, sound effect, background music, a lot of things to consider. So if you need to take a break, and there's a little bit from personal experience, if you need to take a break, just save the profile, save the project, and step away from the computer.
So important. That is so, so important, because I can tell you firsthand, I'm the kind of person that really pushes themselves. I'm sure that is very indicative in the way that I've been talking about stuff and like the amount of stuff I put out. And there have been times where, you know, I've cried because I'm exhausted and I pushed myself too hard, or I didn't like how I sounded and I got really frustrated, or even in the middle of a game one time, I just broke down because it was just too many times. I mean, that's why I say, why I said what I said about make sure you're having fun, because at one point I wasn't having fun and I had to step back. And there was a time where a Shapeshift, I took a month, 2 month break. I didn't have anything come out because it was just like, nope, I need a refresh. I have to find the fun again. Otherwise, I can't keep doing this. So I think you're right too. Mm. You can walk away, take a break.
Yeah, absolutely. Building on that, but not necessarily in the same vein, is there anything that we haven't touched on that you would like to discuss? We've spoken about different systems and content creation and the amazing work that you do put out and in its many layers and forms and platforms we can find it on. But is there anything we haven't touched on that you would like to mention?
I don't think so. I mean, gosh, I have... There's so much in my head. I don't know what I said or what I didn't say at this point. I don't think there is anything. I think we got pretty much everything that's going on. Yeah. I think so.
All right. Well, then I would like to invite you to remind everybody where they can find you, your content, your enamel pins, everything. Please give us that link dump again.
Sure. And I will also mention other shows on the Geek Spectrum Network too, because I think I forgot to talk about that. So with that being said, so yeah, you can find me primarily on Twitter at Rocket Orca, where there is a pinned tweet that has a link to my link tree that can take you to all those places. Primarily, my podcast work is all on Geekspective. So Geekspective is my podcast network I co-own. So go to geekspective.com to find shows I've talked about, like Tales from Mox Fairy, Shapeshift, The Warren of Pelo Grove, Red Mage, Blue Mage. There's also a comedy talk show called Bringing Alice to Athens, which I do with the other Geekspective co-owner, Dave. It's just us being silly. And then we also have Tabletop Babble, of course, and Dames and Dragons just joined our network as well, which is a D&D podcast, actual play podcast. They're great. They're hilarious as well. My work, if you want to see like my portfolio or like my layout or podcasts I've guest on or shows I've guest on, you can go to rocketorca.com. That's all my other stuff. And then there, like I said, that pinned tweet can take you to my Etsy and my Patreon if you're interested. And then of course there's Instagram, Rocket Orca or Rocket Orca _art to see all my art stuff. I think that's everything. Got it. Nailed it.
There is a lot of things going on, all of it of the highest quality. So Amber, it has been an absolute pleasure having you on the show. I'd love to have you back in the future if you'd be willing to join me again.
Sure, I would love to. Like, I love to talk. And so thank you so much for having me on and giving me the space to talk about myself.
Nice. It's been an absolute pleasure. And we will speak again soon.
Great. Awesome.
Thank you for listening. If you'd like to learn more about the show, then go to www.snidersreturn.squarespace.com. Alternatively, you can find us over on Twitter at Return Snyder. We have a Linktree link in the description of this episode. And if you want to support us, come and join us over on Patreon, and we also have a Discord server. Please leave us a review, because we'd love to learn how to improve the channel and provide better content out for those who are listening. Until we speak again, thank you.